Hi there, Dave.
All right, he hears us. All right, we are gathered a little after 1:30 on the 12th floor of the State Capitol for an informal hearing on case number PU-21-89. It is the 14th of July at 1:32. My name is Julie Fedorchak. I'm also joined by Commissioners Randy Christman and Brian Crotius. I don't have any opening comments on this case. Do you have any, Commissioner Christman?
No, thanks. I do not.
Then how about you?
I don't have any.
All right.
I'm just anxious to.
So we have joining us on the line from the company, Dave Cedarquist. Dave, do you have others who will be participating as well?
You know, I have quite a team here from our billing and our rate and legal area. Most of them probably won't be participating, but I will I'll call out a couple. Gail Bronco is here from our regulatory area and very involved in the scheduling of these kinds of refunds. And then Shuba Harris is from our legal area, and she may, she's been involved in the Minnesota side of these kinds of things, and she may be participating as well.
Okay. Thank you, Dave. And the Excel folks are participating virtually. Joining us here in the hearing room are our staff members, Victor Shook, Pat Vaughn, and our new staff member, Marcus Dethloff. Dethloff. Perfect. Still getting used to the last name. So that kind of concludes everybody. The applicant goes first. Brian, if you don't have anything you want to do as portfolio holder, we'll just turn over to Excel.
I do not.
All righty. The floor is yours, Dave.
Thank you, Commissioner, and thanks, Commissioner and staff, for the opportunity to talk about our DOE filing. This is something we have basically do almost on an annual basis now as we receive payments from the Department of Energy. And typically, these refunds take the form of a one-time bill credit. But that said, we are always looking for opportunities to issue these credits in more efficient ways. And with this application, we have proposed an alternative to the typical bill credit. We're hoping that the commission finds that to be preferable. And I'll talk about that in a little bit. So I'm going to walk through the filing. We're going to have a little bit of a discussion around how we schedule these and the challenges that we have in scheduling these credits. And that challenge is actually growing a little bit as we try to fit it in what we call the queue and fit it in amongst all of the other types of refund/credits that the company is involved in our various states. So Matt, you can move to the next screen. So as we kind of focus on our filing here, I just thought maybe a little bit of background would be in order here. So under the Nuclear Waste Policy Act, Xcel Energy has been paying the DOE a fee for future permanent fuel disposal. These plants went into service in the early 70s, so those payments were made for over a couple of decades. However, as you are well aware, the DOE failed to take title to that spent fuel and transport and dispose of it by the contracted date, which was January 31st, 1998. So the company did file actually two lawsuits against the DOE. One lawsuit sought recovery of damages through 2004, the second lawsuit through 2008. Ultimately, in 2011, a settlement was reached for damages that had incurred through 2013. Now, there have been a couple of extensions of that settlement, each extension for three more years worth of damages, bringing us through 2019. So actually over the last, maybe 10 years, customers in North Dakota have been credited about $15.1 million in in these DOE payment credits. So payment 11, which is the subject of this petition, is actually the final payment of the existing settlements. We do expect that future damages will be recovered as well. There's work being done on a future extension to continue receiving compensation for the damages. This particular payment was received late in December. I think it was actually one of the later, if not the latest, that we've ever received a payment from the DOE. This one was a little over $13 million company-wide. The North Dakota allocation is just under $700,000. Okay, Matt.
Dave.
Yes.
I have a, it's a two-part question. So the first, and I haven't asked this before, and I think this is the third or fourth one that I've seen since being on the commission. Why did, you're not paying in to this fund anymore, correct?
That's correct.
So ratepayers all along the line were paying, you know, this money dating back to whenever it began. Was there ever any conversation about just taking the money in one lump sum? Because we often talk about applying the money to the right ratepayer, and you're talking about ratepayers that paid in, I'm guessing, several decades ago that may not be around anymore. Did you ever look at a lump sum payment on the first settlement?
I'm not sure I'm understanding the question. You mean in an attempt to try to get refunds or credits back to customers from the 70s and 80s? Is that where you're going with that?
How far back it dates?
Say that one more time.
It dates back to the 70s and 80s.
Yeah, but I think we need to keep in mind these credits are for damages that the company has incurred as a result of the Department of Energy's breach of contract, if you will. So the costs that the company has incurred to basically store the spent fuel, these are costs that we hadn't anticipated, obviously, when the plants first went into service. But as a result of the breach, we have now incurred costs for temporary storage and casks and those kinds of things. And this is compensation to recover for that, okay, which would have, you know, started in 98.
Okay, that makes more sense. And some of these then are ongoing costs associated with the spent fuel.
Yes.
Okay.
And Matt, we can go to the next slide, I believe. So what we did in this with payment number 11, and when we filed this in February, we were looking down the road at when we might be able to actually implement or issue the credit. And what we were seeing, let me back up a little bit. What we were proposing in this petition was that instead of a one-time bill credit, what we would do is propose to bundle the credit with what we were presuming would be an interim rate refund in our pending electric case. Now, why did we consider that to be a possibility? At the time that we were looking at filing to issue this credit, we were looking down the road and felt that it was quite possible that we could reach a settlement in our case and be in a position where we might be looking at an interim rate refund as early as the third quarter or possibly early quarter four. We have reached a settlement. It's a little bit later than what we had earlier contemplated, but at the time, we thought that it was possible to have a potential interim rate refund ready to go, or in the queue, I guess, in as early as the third quarter. So, you know, if we would have done a one-time billing approach, and we are open to that in our proposal as another alternative, you know, we might have been looking at possibly summer, June or July. So we took a look at that and we thought, you know, that is going to delay the issuance by perhaps, 3 months or so. But there's some pretty significant advantages to doing that. And I've listed some of them on this slide. I don't know that I can even state adequately how much from an efficiency standpoint is gained whenever we can bundle a DOE refund with something else. And we're going to be talking about this in a few minutes even more. But these credits, these DOE credits, take in typically 6 to 8 weeks to process. So if you can, and that goes for any kind of a refund or credit. So if you can bundle a couple of them, there's a tremendous amount of efficiency that's gained there. And of course, I think customers generally appreciate if there's a bundled credit, a higher refund, a more meaningful refund, as opposed to something pretty small. The other thing, of course, that the other benefit, I guess, if you will, for bundling these is then we can potentially look at even slipping another credit or refund into the queue and advancing that one. So that's pretty huge. And then anytime we're involved in these refunds and credits, there's a lot of testing, a lot of validating, data setup, really a lot of work. And of course, even a lot of confirmation that we've got everything right before we actually implement a refund. Because again, if there is an error, we're really creating even a further delay in the process. So those are the reasons why at the time we filed this back in February, we thought it made sense to take the $700,000 DOE and seek to bundle it with what we could fairly confidently assume there would be an interim refund later in the year based on our rate case. Matt, let's go to the next slide. And in this one, I want to talk a little bit more about sort of the challenges that we have in issuing these credits and refunds. And it's kind of interesting because we are doing a lot more, I guess, refunding credit kinds of things now than we've ever done before. I think a lot of it has to do with multi-year rate plans in jurisdictions. The Tax Cuts and Jobs Act was something that, you know, all states had to deal with. We have these DOE payments. There's just a number of things that we are trying to issue in various jurisdictions that we serve. So again, with this one, with this payment, number 11, it came very late. We had a refund/credit queue that was already filling up. And at the time we thought, boy, the best we could do would be maybe a summer implementation, a summer 2021 implementation. And that's why we thought, boy, this might be a good opportunity to bundle it. Now in the past, and in our application, we have a table in there that actually goes back and looks at every one of the payments that we've received and how they've been taken care of. And they haven't all been done with renewable credit. A billing credit. We have used these to reduce the size of base rate increases in the past. We've actually have bundled it with another interim rate refund in the past. And we've even taken a couple of the payments and bundled them together, again, for expediency's sake, to get them to customers as quickly as possible. But this queue that I've been talking about is quite difficult to manage. And one of the things that makes it hard, we have, our billing system is getting long in the tooth. We are unable to process refunds on a concurrent basis. We have to pretty much deal with them sequentially. And so we have five states and multiple kinds of refunds and credits that have to be done sort of one after the another. And we even need to take a little bit of time between them to sort of refresh our data files and prepare for the next billing setup. So that's really the big challenge that we have. And it's become even more difficult now than it was even 4 or 5 years ago. So what kinds of things are we looking at? Well, each state has their own set of requirements. In Minnesota, we do have a reliability service plan, and there are those on occasion will require us to provide credits to customers. Obviously, we have the DOE credits in all of our states. And I will say, sort of happenstance maybe, but some states even in their orders on previous DOE credits gave us deadlines. So within 90 days of getting the check, you have to have the credit issued. Well, that was sort of before this queue became very, very difficult to manage. So those are things that we still need to honor now within this whole queue environment. In Minnesota, we have property tax and capital true ups. We can bundle those. So we're doing that. And that kind of comes out of a prior Minnesota case. We're transitioning our wind source program to the Renewable Connect, and there is going to be a sort of a transition refund involved in that. Obviously, we have an interim rate refund in North Dakota that we still are planning to do. There's an incentive compensation true-up in Minnesota that needs to take place. And earlier this year, there was a pipeline refund in Minnesota. So there's just a sort of an example of more recent credits and refunds that we've had to fit into the queue. And as I mentioned, they take a couple of months to implement each one. So we are unable to do that many in a given year. Let's go move to the next slide, Matt, if you would. So with the bundled approach, there's a couple of differences that I just want to point out to the commission. If we bundle it with the interim rate versus the option of just a single billing credit for the DOE payment, when we bundle with an interim, then the basis for the refund that customers, or the basis for the DOE credit that customers will get, is going to be, it's going to be based on the same criteria, the same basis that the interim refund is, which is how much an interim rate charges have you paid in during the year. And that would be the case here. So that's a little bit different than if we were to do the DOE as a single bill credit approach. In that instance, we typically will just look at a customer's usage in the previous 12 months as opposed to their interim rate charges. We would look at their usage and do an allocation that way. When we filed this petition, we estimated that if it was just using the typical billing one-time billing credit, it would be about a $3 credit for the typical residential customer based on usage. So, and what we can certainly follow up with, I don't have it with me today, is, now here we are sitting months later, we could actually make an attempt to estimate what the individual typical residential refund or credit would be based on the interim refund. We don't anticipate it would be much different from $3, but that's something that we're actually working on it now, and we can get an estimate of what that would be here in a couple of days. We can provide that to the commission and staff. So we don't see it as a big deal, but there is a difference in the calculation or of the credit to each individual customer. As far as allocating the DOE to the state of North Dakota and then to customer classes, that's going to be done the same way under under either approach. So there's no change there. It's just when it gets down to each customer. One thing I really want to mention here is now as we look at the queue and how full it is and how important it is for us to maintain the position of an interim rate refund in North Dakota in the queue, this bill credit approach option really becomes difficult. Unless we have a conscious decision to, you know, push back the interim refund, which we don't want to do. In fact, our settlement indicates that, you know, once final rates go into effect, that interim refund needs to be in place and issued within 30 to 60 days. So it's very hard for us to see how we would even implement a single billing credit for the DOE within this year. So that might even get bumped to later because there are some things we need to manage, some priorities in the queue that need to be, that would put certain credits in front of others, quite frankly. And so that one really looks even more difficult now to do separately. And even if we could squeeze it in now before the North Dakota interim rate refund, you're really doing the two credit refund things almost right next to each other anyway. So you're not really gaining much this, you know, as we approach the latter half of the year. So again, we really think it probably makes sense in this case to bundle these and take the time to prepare and do it right. And we think that, you know, that refund, if we were to get, say, an order by the commission in the fall and final rates would go in effect in, say, November 1, that interim rate would be in posted to customer accounts sometime in December. So we still think that's probably the most efficient and fastest way to get it to customers. And of course, then after we do that, we would file with the commission a compliance report indicating sort of the final statistics on the credit and how much it ended up amounting to for each customer. I think I'm going to pause at this point and take questions. And yeah, we've got a good team here, so I think we'll be able to answer most of your questions if you have any.
Do you guys have any questions today?
Maybe at the end, not on the refund part, but just on the whole future of it.
Sure.
I'll wait with that.
How long has the queue been a problem? Or what's in the queue? Because I'll be honest, just to be candid, when I'm looking, six of the things listed, I believe, are tied to Minnesota, which has nothing to do with North Dakota ratepayers. The one North Dakota item is the rate increase request, which was something you brought to the commission. But it seems like there's a real lack of flexibility, not really being caused on our end, but by another state. Is that the only solution, is a different billing mechanism? Is that the long-term solution to all of this? Because it seems like North Dakota ratepayers are being pushed back through no fault of their own.
Yeah, thank you, Commissioner. You know, a couple of things, I'll respond on that. First of all, our billing team is working on a fix. It won't be available very quickly, unfortunately, but they are working on a workaround for this. So yeah, hopefully this issue won't be an issue within a year or so, or 2023, I think, is when we were looking at being able to actually implement something. The other thing I might mention is, in the past, we've actually had to work with other commissions, and I know for a fact that in North Dakota, we or for a North Dakota DOE credit. We were able to get it in when in speaking with another commission and say, hey, can we get this North Dakota one in, you know, before you guys get your credit in? So we do work with the different commissions and jurisdictions to try to optimize, I guess, our queue. I get what you're saying that, you know, at least in Minnesota, there's a lot of rate making or requirements for refunds that tend to dominate. Obviously, it's our largest jurisdiction as well. But I don't think that it's a situation where any one state or the customers in any one state are being disadvantaged or that we're favoring anyone. We truly are trying to look for ways to, you know, as I said, sort of get the credits and the refunds back to customers as quickly as we can. You know, part of the difficulty too is with scheduling in the queue is we'll file something and then we often can't tell exactly when a commission is going to come to a decision on it too. So sometimes we have to adjust our queue. We try our best to forecast out when we think things will be resolved and orders will be issued. But so that movement and those adjustments also can create some problems as well. One thing that we thought we had early on in this whole DOE thing was when we filed a request early on. I don't remember which payment it was, and we got approval from the commission to go ahead. We actually thought that we had approval to go ahead and implement credits as soon as we got them. We thought that the approval kind of covered all the rest of the DOE, and that wasn't the case, as we soon found out. So part of the problem here, or one way I think we can improve this possibly, is rather than having to file something in North Dakota every time we get a payment, especially if it's a bill credit, you know, the traditional bill credit approach, it'd be nice to maybe get approval to just go ahead and get these things out as soon as we get them. If we do have an idea that maybe we want to combine it with something, maybe then we would file specifically with the commission on a change. But that would really help us too to be able to get some of the North Dakota DOE credits out quicker.
Okay, thank you. I don't have any other questions.
All right. So I personally am okay with Plan A. J or whatever it was called, but curious if staff has any preferences or concerns about any of either of them.
I'm okay with Plan A as well. I think that makes sense. I will just say I think we've heard about this issue for years now. I'm kind of curious if the new Aegis system the company's working on could potentially solve this problem going forward.
I don't believe that Aegis is going to directly respond to this. I think it's probably going to be more of a new billing system would be the ultimate answer. But as I mentioned before, we're looking at a fix that'll work with our current system that would be available much sooner. But I don't believe, and I'll ask my team to correct me if I'm wrong, but I don't believe Aegis contains the systems elements that would address this billing and account question, customer account question.
Sure. I guess that would be my only concern. I mean, it seems like NSP is not shy to spend money on $200 million wind farms, and I don't know what a new billing system costs, but I would hope it's not that much. It just seems like it could be more wisely spent. That was my only point. I have no problem with combining this with the rate case refund. I think that makes sense whether or not you have a problem with NSP's billing system. So. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Do you guys have issues with that? I mean, we can provide direction. I think that would be helpful.
We're talking the bundled approach?
Yeah.
As they described it? Yeah. No, I think it makes sense.
If you would like, I know the company mentioned the idea that we could have our order specify bundle this one with the rate case refund,
sure.
And we can direct them to do whatever. You know, future refunds can just happen without our approval.
I like that simply because I think this is the fourth one that I've seen. I don't believe they're contested. It's a pass-through amount. The company receives it. And, yeah, to go through this process each year and slow things down, I would be more than receptive to that.
I think it makes sense as well. It's become pretty routine, I think, for us. Like you said, we haven't contested any. I think really the only point of that we could contest would be the split between the different jurisdictions. But that's all been reasonably calculated in the past, and it's nothing. You know, we would have continuing jurisdiction if we would have a problem with that on any future one. So if the commission so desires, we can come up with some language in the order approving this that would allow the company to refund immediately upon receipt with some flexibility given their weak billing
and
system.
I'm sorry, Vic. I was just going to add to that and say that, you know, we could certainly file work papers with staff, you know, in advance of actually implementation, just so that you have a chance to, you know, check our work and make sure that it's appropriate.
Sure. I guess I would expect that the company to file, you know, whether it's before, after, during the refunds actually happening in the future, you know, a summary of here's what we received, here's what we're doing.
We normally get a report after refunds,
yep.
Currently, to where the company shows the how well the refund occurred. So I would suggest we keep that too.
Yeah.
The report afterward.
I guess unless the commissioners feel differently, I guess I would be comfortable with just a report after the refund is completed rather than a report before the refund and then another report after. I don't think we need both of those since we would have that continued jurisdiction. Any problems we would find could be corrected after the fact.
I'm fine with after. Do you do much analysis on their plans for these refunds?
On this, there's very little. I mean, so like I said, the amount they get from the DOE is the amount. I mean,
right.
There's no discrepancy on that. If you go back to the further later work papers, where the company is determining the split between North Dakota, South Dakota, Minnesota, between all of their jurisdictions, we want to make sure that the North Dakota allocator is appropriate.
Yeah.
To this point, we haven't had any issues with that, but it's something that we certainly want to
always
keep an eye on. So,
yeah. Okay. All right. Are there any other issues on this that need to be discussed? Otherwise, Randy, did you have more? Any other issues, Dave?
Not from this end. Thank you.
Okay. Good. Thanks for the thorough presentation. Randy, you had one other point you wanted to make.
Yeah. And maybe I've asked this before and don't remember the answer, but it just saddens me to hear words like routine and traditional used when we're dealing with settlement payments from our own federal government because they didn't live up to their end of a deal. Is there anything being worked on for the ultimate storage even now, or is it just something that's over and no one will take it and there's never going to be anything? That's the first question. And then if it's the second one, that you're stuck with this pretty much permanently, how long till you run out of storage again and become the desperate partner in Minnesota that has to accommodate anything just about that anyone comes up with in exchange for more storage capacity?
Thank you, Commissioner, for that question. I'm going to see if Shuba has a comment on that. I do know that we currently have 47 casks at our Prairie Island plant. I'm not sure how many at Monticello or how much we have already received approval to have, but I think at least perhaps Shuba can talk to sort of the future, at least of the DOE settlements.
Thanks, Dave. Commissioner, I'll just tell you first that I'm relatively new to the company. Just joined last year at the in the winter. So I'll do my best to answer your question. We don't have any of our nuclear folks on, but I do know that we are aggressively continuing to pursue these payments through the next 3 years. And we will continue to aggressively pursue them as long as we continue to have costs. In terms of a long-term option, I believe that the federal government is continuing to look for something, but this is a very controversial topic, as you can imagine. And I don't really have any great updates for you on what the status of the federal government's negotiations are.
How long could you continue running your facilities at the current pace before you would run out of approved storage?
We are in the process of looking at exploring alternative storage solutions and potentially filing applications for additional storage. So we are doing that in the short term for the long term.
And these plants are licensed to operate through 33 and 34, Commissioner.
Is there storage for that long?
I don't believe there's existing storage for that period. I believe that there needs to be more storage constructed.
I believe that that's correct. And again, we don't have somebody from nuclear on, and I apologize for not anticipating these questions. But we had filed an application for the independent storage facility that accommodates or that is located close to our Monticello plant in, I believe, in 2006. And that storage was, they have started locating storage there around 2010. So we are getting close to needing new storage, and we are exploring those options.
Okay, thanks.
And we'll follow up with more information.
I think part of their issues was with neighbors. I recall some issues with tribes near one of the plants not liking them, and I think there were some payments to them, if I recall correctly. Hmm. In order to allow the storage. I recall something like that in the prior proceeding, but anyway, it was a considerable amount of.
Is it safe to say that Yucca Mountain is essentially off the table, or estimates I've seen would be, even if it remained in play at the earliest with predictable lawsuits, et cetera, it would be 2040 or 2042? And that would be if it happened?
I think that,
I don't know. Go ahead, Dave.
I was just going to say that I think that we would need to follow up, Commissioner, with you on the future of Yucca Mountain as an option for long-term storage. Maybe Shuba has something more to add, but I've jotted these questions down, and we can certainly follow up.
I was also just going to say that I know that Yucca Mountain is highly controversial, and everyone threatens a lawsuit. So it's very difficult to assess what's going to happen there.
Yep, agreed.
Okay. Well, I think we have a plan of attack. So, with that, is there any other issues to discuss? Doesn't look like it. Is there any objection to this evidence becoming part of the official record upon which a decision will be reached? Victor?
No objection from staff.
Dave, how about you guys?
No.
All right, very good. Then if there's nothing else, and nobody objects to that, the evidence will now become part of the official record, including that presentation that XL went through. And this will be used to make a decision. If there's nothing else to discuss, then this session, this informal hearing is closed. Thanks, everybody.
Thank you.